Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
With all due respect, and remember, I'm saying with all due respect.
Here with Nick Wilson. I am America's sports talk show host. Hear me roar.
Stan Norfleet here.
Hey, it was just a misunderstanding.
No, it ain't.
Oh, bleep you. Get off my...
Bye, Gomez.
Bye, Gomez, right. The both of you.
Do I detect some kind of sarcasm here?
Never.
Sports Radio FNC, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. The show is... back! Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. I've said our names twice because I really want you to know those names. We got a lot to get to. We've got Gene Sapikoff joining us at 11:20 to break down the college football rankings that were released last night, the penultimate rankings. And I wanted to say that I could have said next to last.
No, that means next to last.
But I want the people to know how smart I am. That's why I use the word penultimate. Also, we've got James Borrego, Hornets head coach, coming up at 1 today. We've got Charming or Chach. But good morning, Stan Norfleet. How you doing, buddy?
What's going on, bro? These are some of the best shows because the people that don't necessarily know how the sausage is made with this sports radio thing.
Mm-hmm. We're going to give the people the sausage today. Is that what you're saying?
I don't like that terminology per se. I can just say that today's show should be entertaining, flying by the seat of our pants a little bit. Shout out to my man, Itty Bitty Fitty. Good morning to him. You, Nicholas, and Charlotte and Metrolina, and those streaming across the world. You know where you are.
I just would like to start by doing the thing that nobody in the media has the stones to do. Nobody in the media does what you and I are about to do.
Hold on. Don't let me in with you.
Nope. Nick Wilson co-signing this take.
This is mostly Nick Wilson on this part.
People on a national level only ever like to talk about what the College Football Playoff Ranking Committee gets wrong. Well, last week, when we were talking about this on Wednesday, the Wednesday of Street Turkeys, I commended the committee for getting the rankings right. Well, today, 1 week later, I'm here to commend the committee for getting their selection committee rankings right, the penultimate selection.
That means next to last.
Because you've got Georgia at 1, mm-hmm. Michigan up 3 spots after beating Ohio State.
They should be.
They're not just beating. They beat the crap out of Ohio State.
And physically beat them, too.
Michigan at 2, Alabama at 3, Cincy at 4, Oklahoma State coming off the big win in Bedlam at 5, and then at 6 is Notre Dame. The first two-loss team is Ohio State at 7. I think that makes sense. Then it goes Ole Miss, Baylor, and Oregon to round out the top 10. The biggest quibble I think you can have with this entire thing is maybe Alabama staying ahead of Cincinnati. And that is a huge maybe for me. I don't have a problem with Cincinnati being fourth there. I think the committee got it right for another point. So to me, I don't care what happens 5 weeks ago, Fleet. Right now, when it matters most, I think they've got the chess pieces all where they need to be.
I would agree with that. I don't have an issue with Cincinnati being at 4. Because the committee is setting this up where if Oklahoma State were to lose to number 9 Baylor, Oklahoma State at the 5 spot, if 5 loses to 9, they're out. Notre Dame has already lost to Cincinnati head-to-head. Notre Dame doesn't have a championship game data point. They be out. And then Cincinnati would get absolutely mollywopped by Georgia. I saw if they would have played this weekend, the spread from Vegas would open 17.5 Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So they would reward Cincinnati and then absolutely knock their face off. Right back. So I don't have a problem with how it laid out. Now,
I do. I think the paranoid folks for college football fans are saying, well, if Alabama beats Georgia and Oklahoma State wins the Big 12, they're going to squeeze Cincinnati. I think that is a distinct possibility that could happen.
And in that scenario, an SEC champ, Alabama, one loss, formerly number one in the country, Georgia,
mm-hmm.
a Big 12 champ that has the best strength of schedule of anybody in the top four, in that case, not named Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Oklahoma State would have a better overall strength of schedule then Cincinnati, even with one loss, is a Big 12 champ.
So my point is, I see the path that they can do that. One, I don't know that we should expect chalk out of the top five. Michigan, I think, is very prone. What has Harbaugh done more than anybody else? As soon as he gets something looking like a big win,
he's
completely bleeped the bed. So there's that fact. I also don't think Michigan, I mean, guys, the whole we're going to sleep on Iowa after beating Ohio State, that Michigan did what it wanted to do. It didn't just beat Ohio State. It beat holy crap out of Ohio State. So I don't really trust Michigan in this situation. I don't know that I even trust Oklahoma State as good as they've been, because they still got to go win the Big 12 champ. And oh, by the way, I don't think Alabama's beating Georgia. So if you're a conspiracy theorist saying, oh, Cincinnati's about to get squeezed, there's a possibility. But I'm okay having the conversation, one loss Big 12 champ Oklahoma State versus Cincinnati. I think that is a fair conversation to be had. This isn't the same thing as if we were talking about, once upon a time, we were talking about, well, a two-loss conference champion from a Power 5 school versus unbeaten Cincinnati. That's when I think it becomes trash. That was the big thing that I think it was Todd McShay said after Ohio State lost to Michigan, saying if Ohio State wins out, even if Cincinnati loses out or wins out, he'd like to see Ohio State put in over them because he wants a more proper playoff, whatever the bleep that crap means.
Yeah, proper is very subjective. Now, I do believe Ohio State is a better team than Cincinnati, but it doesn't look like we're going to see that played out. I think it's important also to highlight, I agree with you, again, getting Cincinnati in their proper seed at four. Cincinnati is very fortunate this year. And this is why when the group of fives start getting excited, it's about a moment. Clemson and the rest of the ACC bleep the bed down. The Pac-12's best chance was Oregon. Oregon has a terrible loss. Now they have two. All right, Oregon has the loss to Stanford. Who was the other terrible loss? Whoever it was. So you got the Pac-12 out, ACC out. The only other competition for the Notre Dame. They happen to have scheduled Notre Dame in the year, beat Notre Dame. Their only ranked opponent until they get to this weekend with SMU. My point is, it lined up perfectly for Cincinnati, and they were able to take advantage of the opportunity because they scheduled Notre Dame. So, you know, you hear me say this all the time. Group of five, you want to be taken seriously? Schedule as many real opponents out of conference as you can.
But it sounds, even in like what we're talking about, like you're still just not giving Cincinnati their flowers.
I'm not, because they play against crap every week.
Well, but the point is, at one, the Conference USA, or sorry, the American, mm-hmm. like they're going to play a top 20 team there with Houston.
Now, Houston's ranked, so that'll be two.
Okay.
But if they were in, it's like if they were in this year's ACC, if they were in this year's SEC.
Well, but they're not. That's where it actually comes off to me as sounding like you're, oh, well, good for you, Cincinnati. Here's a head pat and move on. Like,
but I'm saying they haven't played anyone. I don't care if they were coming from conference, Harris Teeter. Like,
but they have.
But no, they haven't played any. This will be the second ranked opponent they played. Cincinnati, of everybody in the top 10, has the worst strength of schedule in the conference,
but that's,
in the country.
That's one metric. They also have one of the top 10 margins of victory.
Nobody.
Well, but the... But here's the thing.
Like, there's nothing you can do to
strength of schedule isn't the only thing that matters. This is where we just get into it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we need to qualify. Listen, you are right to say, because I think what you're trying to say is everybody wants to make the case that this is now the beginning of like this flood, flood of, you know, group of five teams have a chance.
And wouldn't care if they did, as long as you play people.
Well, but the greater point is this is still the anomaly. Right? Because the group of five will always be going uphill. I'm okay saying
until they schedule out-of-conference opponent. If I was in a group of five,
clearly not, because Cincinnati's in the fourth spot now and can still get into the playoffs.
Because they have the Notre Dame. And that's what the McShays, the Mees, and others. It's not about supremacy. It's compete. Go compete.
I understand. I think the point is we can make the point that Cincinnati is the anomaly without having to bleep on what Cincinnati has actually done.
But I don't believe Cincinnati's done enough.
And that's why people think that you just are being completely dismissive and unfairly so of Cincinnati.
So I think in big picture, right, when we get back to winners and losers, the bottom line is the committee has decided, doesn't give a damn what Stan Fleet means, They've decided, Cincinnati, you've earned the fourth spot. But they've also set Cincinnati up. Hey, you got to go win your game. They're 10.5-point favorites in the AAC championship.
Which was always going to be the case in the first place. For a group of five team to get in,
you gotta
they always had to go undefeated, sure. And you always had to have a big win at the very least.
And a championship game. You had to go do the championship game thing. Okay. If Oklahoma State loses, the Big 12 is out, in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're going to let Baylor in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a case to be made, but I don't think it's enough to overcome an undefeated Cincinnati. So Cincinnati won. They, to me, were the biggest winner of last night.
I agree. I also think another reason why I think Cincinnati is a big winner is being placed four still right now. Mm-hmm. I think Georgia's going to beat Alabama. And there's a chance that Cincinnati could go as far as two. I don't think they're going to get there. Because I think if Oklahoma convincingly beats Baylor, even if Michigan and Alabama lost, I think Cincinnati, the highest they're going to go is probably two. It would take absolute bedlam. It would take Michigan, Alabama, and OK State losing for Cincinnati to be two. But that's the only way they get there. But I also think having Michigan and Alabama ahead of you, I think one of those teams is going to lose.
It would behoove Cincinnati to get to the three spot.
And because 100%.
Keeps you from getting throttled by Georgia.
Well, I think Cincinnati could beat Michigan if that's the matchup. I don't think this Alabama team is infallible, although I'm not betting against Nick Saban in a playoff game.
I was going to say, Luke Fickell and Cincinnati.
But
on a neutral field versus Nick Saban and the Tide, in the college football playoff on that stage, you would pick Luke Fickell.
I didn't say that.
I'm just asking.
I said, 704-570-9610.
Why do you get so frustrated when I ask the question?
Well, no, because you're just a college football supremist,
no,
and I
I'm
love
not.
You
I'm
for
a,
it.
I'm a college football compete.
I have to
I reward the teams that play people.
I have to accept you for who you are and love you in spite of your foibles, and I'm okay with that.
But
Gene Sapikoff of the Post and Courier.
Like I do.
And they're wrong some of the time. The committee is not infallible.
That plays by their own rules. They're
real
wrong.
Quick, Gene Sapikoff, 11:20, Post Courier. We've also got James Borrego coming up at 1. Looking at the top 10 here, we'll ask you who were the biggest winners and losers from last night. Cincinnati, ultimate losers, because they haven't beaten every team that's ever won a national championship before.
Michigan won as well.
And I'll tell you, the committee told us who the real losers were last night, and that shone a really bad light on the committee. That's next on Sports Radio FNC.
Committee obviously was aware of all the coaching changes while we were going through the rankings. This week, it didn't apply because the games had occurred and we evaluated based on those games. Once the championship games wrap up, to your point, our protocol does include the ability for the committee to consider a player or a coach not being available, and should that have an effect on the outcome of a game, that can be considered. At this point, we'll have to wait and see how that factors in, but it is one of the criteria that's now added to strength of schedule, to head-on-head competition and winning championships, etc.
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet.
I heard the executive director say strength of schedule in there. I'm just saying.
That sound of Gary Barta, the executive director of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, who there. We talked about last night's college football rankings and the importance of Cincinnati being a winner. You know who the biggest loser was last night? It was Notre Dame players.
Yeah,
because
true.
Gary Barta, you heard what you wanted to hear, which was him talking about strength of schedule.
Conference championships.
I gave them their flowers. I think from the seeding side of things, I don't have a single problem with what they did in the top 10. They being the College Football Selection Committee. But I really have a problem with this theory, or with this metric being that Notre Dame, who currently sits sixth, because their head coach decided to enrich his life with Bayou money going to LSU, that team can now be penalized, hypothetically, in the rankings as things shake out because that coach left. That, to me, is punitive, intentionally, unintentionally. It's punitive against the players who've already had that guy they signed up to play for disappear and go down to Bayou country. I thought that was a trash logic. I think that's insincere, and I think it's patently absurd by the College Football Selection Committee.
I think it's unfair, but I understand it. I go back to when you and I first had this conversation, the first week of this year's college football, the CFP ranking show. And I said, the college football season has now changed. There's a different agenda now than it was Labor Day weekend when we kicked off.
Mm-hmm.
They're putting on a tournament. And so the rules of the tournament are different.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm also thinking about being a former player and how much that would suck. But I also understand it. The likelihood that a team that is eligible for a CFP spot. Now, the interesting is the time frame. Can an assistant coach, can you get somebody like a Bob Stoops? Can you get somebody in there with some experience on the staff or not for 30 days-ish to get the kids ready to compete? It is unlikely in my mind, not impossible, that they would come out the same as they had been during the year. But I do agree with you that it is punitive. But under the land of the law that is the college football playoff, this is par for the course.
No, I don't think it is. Because you just said something that has nothing to do with what has happened on the field. You just had, when it comes to strength of schedule, I think people go overboard with it. I think they try to make it the end-all be-all. But I understand it head-to-head. I understand. If the committee said Cincinnati beat Notre Dame in Notre Dame by going to Notre Dame, if it was between those two teams, I would understand that. If we go to margin of victory, if we go to injuries, any of those things factor into what happened. Brian Kelly leaving had not, like, it has nothing to do with the on-field product. And I think, and I'll be honest with you, Notre Dame is not, they have not yet retained officially Marcus Freeman or Tommy Reese, who both Brian Kelly's trying to woo down to the Bayou. And neither of them have been made interim head coach. I think Notre Dame should force the issue by naming one of those guys interim head coach. It's disingenuous to say, well, the coach left, so this changes things. The coach doesn't go out there and play.
I don't feel that way. But the coach in college is a factor. Now, it's mostly about Jimmys and Joes in college. The NFL, we'll talk about Matt Rhule here in a second. NFL is more about coaching than in college.
Mm-hmm.
College, you got the right amount of dudes. You're going to win X amount of games anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this. Let me try and do an apples to apples. If Desmond Ridder of Cincinnati was injured and couldn't take the field for the rest of the season, Cincinnati would not be ranked fourth today.
Correct.
Okay. Same thing. Now, I understand what you're going to say. He's a player on the field.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy that is impactful to what happens on the field.
Well, but I would only say is injuries are, you don't intend to get injured.
But
they're just a happenstance of what happens by playing the game.
All right.
Brian Kelly leaving. I mean, effectively, you're punishing in this.
I understand your point.
Wait, no. You're punishing Notre Dame because of the early signing period, which has allowed these coaches to go. And by the way, I don't put any of the hate on Brian Kelly over this. Brian Kelly had a timeline to make a decision
for life-changing
money, and quite frankly, for legacy-changing job.
I'm with you on that.
Which is what LSU is. This is the conference selection committee deciding this matters as much as some of those other factors, and that's where I have a problem.
I think
a lot of people focus on, well, what's going to make the greatest game? I think
that's the agenda.
Well, but I think we've shown
that's all that matters here.
Allow me to get through this. What we've shown is they've made their games before, and they've been wildly uncompetitive
with all of
their metrics.
So
the idea that now we should add another metric and punish players who have earned the right to be in the conversation because of a decision that they didn't get to make that was forced upon them is trash. It is wrong.
Stephen A. has a saying.
Ooh.
Some people choose to focus on how things should be. Stephen A. often says he chooses to focus on how they are. Here's what is. The College Football Playoff Committee and ESPN, they make the rules for what they believe constitutes the formula that makes the best matchup.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, I agree with them because they are in control. If I'm associated with Notre Dame football or any of these other schools, in this case it happens to be Notre Dame football, I would feel like, well, damn, I just did all this work, and I don't get an opportunity to see my work through. This is the power we've given the College Football Playoff Committee and the network that backs them.
Well, and the power that we have is to put pressure on them with the narrative and the whether it's this microphone or whether it's Stephen A. or whether it's any of those people to say this is right or this is wrong. And I'll say this, like, how far do we go with this? Because we've seen, and this is something you and I talked about in the pre-show, we've seen Ohio State lose their offensive coordinator.
That has happened. Coordinators take jobs all the time.
We've seen
Kirby did it.
And by the way, Alabama's lost half their staff going into the playoffs
got
before.
Murk going into the national championship.
So, like, we've seen all of this happen. I don't think, like, I understand that a head coach in college football is important. I'm not saying that they're not. But specific to one game and to a matchup for a team that's been playing together for 12 games this year, I think the conference, I think this is a made-up thing.
No, it's now, a real thing because it happened to me. Not in the college football playoff.
No, I'm talking about it's a made-up thing in terms of weighing in on whether it should be make or break for a team in the college football playoff.
Smaller scale, but the point is there. And it's actually the two teams were in the same boat. In 2001, Georgia, we played Georgia in the Oahu Bowl. That was Jim Donnan had been announced he was leaving. Mm-hmm. George Welch had announced he was out. Both teams went out there, and we were a different team. We had our bowl practices. We in Hawaii. I'm on surfboards with a Mai Tai. I was not thinking about being prepared for a football game. Now, I was also injured, and it was a little different, but my teammates were the same. Georgia, same way. My point is, when the head dude, when you know he's not going to be there, now they're playing for something different. I understand that. But when you,
I don't think you can discount that.
My point is, the head coach being there and locked in matters to dudes that are 18, 19, and 20.
Do you think right now Notre Dame wants to win or lose less because Brian Kelly's gone? Because I guarantee you.
It's one thing to want to. Do you think Notre Dame would be prepared?
Yes.
I think today,
if you named Marcus Freeman, the interim head coach, and said, Marcus, this is your opportunity, and go to the players.
30 days to go up against Jim Harbaugh, Nick Saban.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
He gets slaughtered.
One, none of those teams are that good. None of those, this isn't, you're going to get that to go, and that might end up being the case, they get to go to Georgia. But yes,
Marcus Freeman is going to beat Nick Saban.
Because it starts at the fundamental question. Have Notre Dame players and coaches, not named Brian Kelly, earned the right? Have they played well enough to be in this conversation?
I agree with
the
you.
Answer,
that's how it should be.
The answer is yes.
Yeah, that's what it should.
And
but what 30, is?
And 30 days should be enough.
30 days is not enough.
704-570-9610.
Like, I know you feel like it is. You have a point. You have a passion for why you feel like it is. As a dude that played Power 5 football, I can tell you unequivocally, 30 days with a chip on your shoulder, Marcus Freeman or Gotze or whoever else.
There is no comparable thing to this. So there is no comparable thing to this scenario in terms of apples for apples. So the reality is, we don't know. I guess my question is, are you comfortable with 18, 19, 20-year-old kids being screwed because their head coach had to make a business decision?
I've already said the answer is no. There is a caveat. It's not about what I want. It's about what it is. They've decided, and I understand why they made that decision, that a coach not being there for bowl preparation. Look, Orgeron got murked, and he's one of the few dudes that have beat Nick Saban. Do I think Marcus Freeman or another coordinator is going to come out of the woodworks and have Notre Dame ready to play in 30 days versus Kirby Smart and Dabo Swinney and Nick Saban and Urban Meyer? I know he's not there anymore. I'm just saying, no. No, I don't believe that.
One, they should hire Coach O as the interim. I think we agree on this now. Two,
You're being ridiculous now.
What you just said is the speculation that college football, the selection committee, gets away with. That.
So how are we going to take down CFP? How are we going to take it down?
I think from the inside.
We had BCS.
I think what we continue to do is we continue to get these the coaches to take these big contracts, and we just start an all-out war in college football, and then make the college football selection committee mediate that too. Distract them with the nonsense of the coaching market.
I thought it was cool. A lot has been made about how Brian Kelly did this.
Mm-hmm.
You and I talked this morning. We see the contract. It's a bleep ton of money.
Yeah.
We know that. I probably would have made the same decision. He had hit his ceiling at Notre Dame. there's a greater likelihood that he'll win a national championship in the Bayou than it is in South Bend.
And if he doesn't, he's going to float off into the ether on a bet of money.
Just money. Okay, cool. There's no good way to break up with your girlfriend, to leave your wife, your husband, to leave your employers. That can be debatable. Because it's interesting. We're at Will State, but I got to give you 2 weeks notice. I think that's interesting. But my point is, like, what was he going to do? Like, okay, you could send the kids a message early. This reminds me of something you can identify with. I get tired of hearing people, it's the way LeBron left. No, it wasn't. It was the fact that he left. Because you understood what that meant.
No, it was definitely the way he left.
Well, you were there. I just think people conveniently use that as an excuse.
So
this is about them leaving, and they know their CFP opportunities have been compromised.
So I will say, I think Notre Dame and the fan base has been very petulant and crybaby about it because they can't believe somebody left. There is no good way to leave your wife. There is better ways to leave your wife.
I agree with that.
Brian Kelly probably did it the worst way. He could have left his wife.
Oh, no, it could have been worse than that.
That being said,
And don't wake me up at 7 a.m. for you to talk 2 minutes.
I think you're making my point. 704-570-9610. The College Football Selection Committee's Gary Barta, the executive chairman, saying that Notre Dame could absolutely be held back in the playoff rankings, the final playoff rankings, held out of the playoffs because Brian Kelly left to take the job at LSU. Is that the right move? And as we continue on with Overreaction City, Duke lost. That's next on Sports Radio FNC.
Has been outstanding. 8 of 9 free throws down the stretch, and down goes number one. They storm the floor, and this will take away a little of the sting of that Michigan win on the gridiron over Ohio State. And what an attention getter for this fan base here, who generally keeps their focus on football.
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. That was the final call in Ohio State's upset in Columbus, 71-66 over Duke, courtesy of ESPN, and all due respect to the announcers there. That absolutely does not begin to touch the pain that Ohio State fans feel after not getting beat by Michigan, but by getting walloped by Michigan this last weekend. That was 100% a BS sports narrative that was thrown out there, but good win for Ohio State last night.
Oh, they're selling a fight. I get it. It was a good win. Shout out to Itty Bitty Fitty. On the way out the door yesterday, off air, he called the upset of the number one team in the country. And some people are going to say you're being a hater because you love your heels. But no, that's real talk.
And you actually want to give him more credit. He said E.J. Liddell was to give Paolo Banchero or Banchero fits. And that's precisely what happened.
No doubt. E.J. Liddell, 14 points in 36 minutes. 14 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 blocks. He was a man-child.
Well, and what was interesting is Duke has kind of made their brand this physical basketball and then allow Paolo Banchero to make a lot of the splashy, fun plays for you, do a lot of the scoring for you.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio State out-physicaled you. Some of that was the discrepancy in calls because Theo John got fouled out.
Yeah.
You had of your starters not named Keels.
Mark Williams had 4.
Had 4 personal fouls.
Yep.
So Roach, Williams, Banchero, and Moore all had 4 fouls on top of John fouling out.
Nobody on Ohio State had more than 3.
So on one hand, I did look at the way that they played offensively in the final 5 minutes where they didn't score a basket. On one hand, they didn't hit their shots, and that's 100% fair. On the other hand, I think the whistles took Duke out of playing how Duke likes to play. Every time Duke tried to get physical, well, here's another foul on Theo John. I heard something on the Mac Attack today. I think it was Willie P. said, well, now you've got the formula to beat Duke. The formula is nobody's hitting shots. Paolo Banchero can't make any shots, and then you're not allowed to play physical basketball. How many teams are going to be able to do those 3 things against this Duke team?
This is the first time, I think Duke was up 13 at the break. It's the first time in 185 games that essentially they've lost after being up double digits at the break.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't see this. You pointed out a lot of the reasons why that happened. I watched that Duke team last night, and I go, I've seen this before. In my head, I'm looking at it like, they're going to have some of the same struggles, especially in the half court, that Zion, R.J. Barrett, Reddish group had.
Mm-hmm.
They can't shoot, or they don't shoot well, they're in trouble.
I can see that comparison.
They're not fluid in the half court.
I can see that comparison. I would probably make the case of saying they're not fluid in the half court yet.
Yeah.
I love Keels. He has been a lot of fun to watch this year. And I think you've got more talent from your bench. You're seven deep now. You might be able to get another guy or two developed in time for when it really matters in the ACC title game. I just think it's as simple as if your guys aren't shooting, Paolo Banchero needs to be excellent down the stretch. He had a turnover with 2 minutes to go, and he had two missed shots, a jumper and a three-pointer. One that would have tied the game, one that would have put you ahead in the final minute of play. Like, I think last night, rather than being some big indictment on Duke basketball, I think it was an anomaly. I don't think how things played out last night are going to work itself. And what continues to blow me away is Paolo Banchero's box score sucks. He was really rough in the final 2 minutes of that game. Really rough. But there are still so many moments in what I think is his worst game in college basketball. You look at the moments that led up to the shots that he missed last night, they were still incredibly impressive. I really think that where this game really got away from them is because they couldn't be physical. Because you had five guys, literally, that's more than half of their rotation in foul trouble. Mm-hmm. And by the way, this is not just the referees were jobbing Duke. They were deserved calls. I thought the one foul for Theo John on Key was a little bit ticky-tack, but most of the calls were spot on. Duke just got too physical for their own good, and they got called on it on the road. But I think what that led to is, how many times did they settle for just the dumbest three-point shots in that final 5 minutes of play? I mean, there were shots. Like, Keels had one that it was good ball movement, but you're up. Just score baskets. You don't need to score 3 points at a clip here. You're ahead. And even when it gotten tied, it wasn't as if Ohio State in the final 5 minutes was the 2014 Golden State Warriors. They were missing their shots too. They weren't flawless in the final 5 minutes. So the fact that they reverted to settling for three-pointers, I thought, was the other big reason. It was the other half of them getting in foul trouble last night and them costing them that game.
Ohio State, who had been putrid from the free throw line all night, they finished the game at 50%. When it got clutch, when it got under the 4-minute mark, they made their free throws. Duke didn't. And Duke shot 75% from the free throw line on the night. So it was good to see Duke's defensive intensity back. They will get after you. The ACC is going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't see anybody competing with their talent and their tenacity on the defensive end. They're going to do their thing in the open court. They're going to have more games than not that the shots are going to go down. And we haven't said this. This is their first true road game. They're now 0-1 on the road, obviously. So I think for some guys, that might have been a little intimidating. Going up in, what's that arena? You know their play. What's the
Value
arena?
Value City.
I saw they had Value City on the floor, but I was hoping it really wasn't. Is it really Value City Arena?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a department store. And by the way, not great value. It was the biggest misnomer in the world. They put value on the thing, and then you go shop there, and everything's 20% more expensive.
On the road, the environment impacted them. Once they found out they were in a fight, and that's why I look at Coach K, like, where was the leadership? Where was the floor general to settle things down? Roach, you've seen a lot of basketball in a Blue Devil uniform.
So what I would say on that, I think there's something to be said in basketball. Borrego's done this the first 23 games of this year as well. A little bit different than the NBA because you have more games. But I think there is something to be said, and I think coaches will use early games, even what would have been a bad loss, like to Ohio State, who was unranked, going into this game. I think you lose it as a way of teaching your players or seeing if they can figure it out themselves. I don't think if this is the last game before ACC play begins, I don't think Coach K allows the final 5 minutes to go the way that it did. So I don't look at that as Coach K, where was that, or why didn't you talk with Roach or any of the more veteran guys? I looked at it. This was a moment where Coach K said, all right, let's see how this plays out. I'm completely okay with this. And I'll go back to this because, I understand that every time we talk about Duke, and the same thing happens when we talk about North Carolina, oh, there's going to be a certain amount of people who just don't like that school. Bleep those guys. I still think the Gonzaga win, the knocking off the previous number one, I still think that's a much more impressive win than last night with some great indictment or a loss. I think it was the worst. I think with circumstances conspiring against you and you fell apart there. And the reality is Ohio State's the one team that if you're a physical team and you can't play physical, well, then they're going to be able to out-physical you. Because of the way the whistles wind, they allowed Ohio State, who plays a physical brand of basketball, guys like Key and Liddell, they allowed them to be more impactful because of all their guys getting into foul trouble.
Nick.
It is going to be UNC and Duke, though, for this conference. It's all on those teams.
Bro. Keels made a free throw. That made it 66-59. Duke calls a timeout at 3:20. Coach K didn't call another timeout. So as...
letting him play.
As the Buckeyes are making this comeback, I'm just like, hey, rally the troops, bro.
Let them play. Like, this loss isn't going to sink you, your tournament bid. This loss isn't. Like, I'm 100% with Coach K. I believe in this kind of coaching. Let your guys see if they can figure it out, and if they don't, then this becomes your rallying cry, your teachable moment.
Well, what's the record now? It was 5-2 going into or at the conclusion of this game?
Who?
ACC Big Ten Challenge. What's the record now? Big Ten's winning.
I feel like this is something you could have had for us. Instead of just throwing it out.
I thought maybe itty bitty feet had it.
All right, guys. I can't even do it with a straight face. How much panic should we have? Is last night's Duke loss an anomaly? With that being said, Mike Florio was right about the Panthers, but he was wrong about Christian McCaffrey.
6-2. I found it.
That's next on Sports
Big
Radio.
Big Ten leads 6-2.